You are listening to Sid Weighs In, where Tuck School business professor, associate dean for executive education, and an expert on strategy and leadership, Sidney Finkelstein, shares his views on what leaders are doing, why they are doing it, and whether it makes sense for them and for you.
Hello, this is Sidney Finkelstein, and welcome to another edition of Sid Weighs In, the podcast, where I talk about one of my recent BBC columns with a guest host. And today, my guest host is Ellen Corey. Hi, Ellen.
Hi, Sid. Thank you for having me on today.
It's great to have you, and tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm a student here at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth. Prior to coming to Tuck, I worked in defense for a while at the Pentagon and then moved into consulting. In the future, I'm looking into getting into a general management role, so that's been the focus of my studies here at Tuck.
So it sounds like if you're going to become a manager and a leader and a general manager, this topic today of resilience has something to do with your future.
Absolutely, it does. It's something that I've been giving a lot of thought to, both when I look at the types of companies I would be interested in and what types of positions I think I would fit into best. One of the things most recently that got me interested in this topic was really listening to a lot of the different entrepreneurs we hear about who often talk about their past failures, what they learned from those failures, and how they bounced back. In a word, they're talking about how they've been resilient. And what I'm wondering from this, what we've talked about here, is this resilience unique to entrepreneurs? Is it something that we see more with entrepreneurs than in other areas?
Yeah, you know, I would say for successful entrepreneurs, you got to be resilient because you're never going to get it all right. But not everybody learns from their mistakes, learns from what goes down, what causes their problems, and being able to bounce back up is a big deal. So when you look at famous entrepreneurs that are talking about their careers and how they failed and how they got back up, we're getting one part of the sample, if you will. We're not getting the other people that couldn't quite get there. But, you know, if the question is, do you need resilience to be an entrepreneur? I think a successful entrepreneur. I think it's absolutely the case, and it really does require a lot of open-mindedness. It requires you to acknowledge if something goes wrong, it really has gone wrong, and you have something to do with that. And it also gets to one of the most common words nowadays in Silicon Valley is the pivot. You know, we pivot. It basically means I have no clue what's going on. I better change what I'm about to do. But a pivot really is all about changing what happened because it's not working. And it's a great example of a modern version of resilience, I think.
I think the pivot is something that we talk about even beyond entrepreneurship as well, particularly given the number of career switches people have these days, looking at really pivoting from one career to a next. If you're at a company that's not successful or the position isn't working, the trajectory isn't, really having that ability to pivot to another role or even another company is important.
Yeah, boy, that is really true. I've written and some other columns about some of the people issues related to changing careers and how it's really the way it is for everyone nowadays. And in a sense, you want to be you want to get ahead of the resilience curve, if you know what I mean, because resilience means usually you're bouncing back from failure, let's say in your example, in a career situation. And you got to be able to do that. But trying to map out and think ahead of time, you know, things are happening here, I need to look for a new opportunity is really critical.
I think that's something they've encouraged us a lot to do at business school here, really to be able to focus on that ability to plan out and look forward. So I think you've talked about that a little bit in the columns. Let's hear the column.
Okay, here we go. Resilience, a lesson from Sochi. Did you see the American figure skater, Jeremy Abbott, crash to the ice during the short program at the Sochi Olympics, rolling into the wall, clutching his side in pain? Maybe you also saw him get up just 10 seconds later and continue his skate, despite the pain, embarrassment, and fear. I was watching, and all I could think of was, this kid's got guts. In business, we have a word for it, yes, resilience. It's often the secret sauce that separates the highest achievers from the mass of people who are perfectly capable, but not exceptional. If doctors could prescribe resilience, we'd all want it. The good news is, each of us has the potential to live a resilient life on and off the job, if we choose to. It may be difficult to do, sometimes even unfathomable, but that just makes it all the more powerful and important. Here's a quick test. If you genuinely believe that every one of us can be resilient and can bounce back on and off the job, then you probably are a lot more resilient than you think you are. It takes confidence to be resilient. But, and this is so true of so many leadership characteristics, too much confidence is a killer. Bouncing back from failure requires, by definition, that you recognize something has gone wrong and you were the one who made it happen. The complacent and the arrogant do not accept personal responsibility. For them, failure is someone else's fault. We've seen plenty of this during Sochi as well. Hockey players blaming errant referee calls, snowboarders complaining the snow was, quote, too soft. I'd like to see that, actually, how the snow gets too soft. Although up here in the Northeast, we ski on ice, so there is something to it. And the speed skating coaches attributing poor results to those new high-tech suits selected for their athletes. You'll pay a steep price for this retrograde attitude. After years of studying failure in organizations around the world, if there's one thing I've learned, it's that humility and open-mindedness in the face of mistakes is the single best thing you can do to improve results. Everyone fails, but not everyone recovers from failure. The key is to learn from it rather than get beaten by it. So many of us have a natural tendency to stick our head in the sand when confronted with information we'd rather not hear. For example, Ron Johnson, the ill-fated CEO of JCPenney, who was so hell-bent on making the discount department store into another Apple retail behemoth that he completely missed all sorts of signals from employees and customers that amounted to a direct challenge to his radical turnaround strategy. For Johnson, he chose to ignore the noise and instead listen to all those who agreed with him. But that's no way to run a company. Being open to new information, even better, going out of your way to learn what you wish wasn't true, is the hallmark of a resilient leader. How else can we adapt and change if we don't know what's really going wrong? The challenge of resilience is not just about our work lives. If you're like me, you've probably thought about where resilience comes from and wondered whether we're helping our own children build this vital capability for their futures. Well, I believe we have some cause for worry. When parents help their kids navigate every challenging situation from extra help with homework to completing college applications for them, they are doing an incredible disservice to their children. Parents want to protect their kids from failure, but doing so deprives them of the opportunity to practice not just a life skill, but an essential work skill. When self-esteem becomes more important than results, we are inadvertently training young people to become less adaptable, not more. It won't get any easier in the future either. In a disruptive and competitive world, the rate of failure is going up, not down. For example, when you track the makeup of the Fortune 100 over time, you find that the number of companies falling off the list has gone up at an increasing rate. That means that while 25 years ago, some 20% of the biggest companies in the world dropped out of the top 100 after 10 years, more recently, the 10-year attrition rate has jumped to over 30%. And with the fortunes of companies, so goes many of our careers. Many of us already expect to change jobs many times over our careers, but we may need to change careers too, maybe more than once. That's why there's no substitute for constant learning and networking, the former to ensure you will always have something to offer others, and the latter to keep you in the deal flow of job opportunities. Resilience is not just about getting up off the floor, but also being ready for whatever comes next, even if you don't know what it is. Failure, setbacks, and falling down on the ice in front of millions of people are no longer unusual events, but regular features of a dynamic, competitive, and highly demanding work environment. Getting up to finish your skate is no longer optional.
I really enjoyed that. One thing I'm curious about is the line between resilience and preparation. In women's slalom, Michaela Schifrin suffered a near fall about halfway through the second run, but recovered, regained concentration, and won gold. So is that resilience or is that preparation?
Yeah, I remember seeing that, and I was watching it being streamed live on my app, because I don't think NBC decided to show it live on TV. They wanted to save it. But that's a different topic. You're watching, and you see kind of this split second, the ski kind of falls out to the side, and the speed she's going at is like crazy. And she gets back on the line and actually ends up having a winning time. Completely amazing. And I'm looking at that and I'm saying, yeah, that's resilience. But you know what that is even better? Is exactly what you just asked. It's preparation. She's even said that she has imagined in her brain the entire run many, many times what could happen and what could go right and what could go wrong. And it's all been pictured and imagined and thought about. And so, when you get into that kind of really scary spot, your physical kind of instinct takes over, but if you don't have that other, that kind of mental capacity through preparation and through really strong character to not for a second allow that bit of doubt to go, really a split second, to allow some doubt to go into your head about whether you can recover. It doesn't even enter into the equation. Your brain is just focused completely on the physical because you've managed the mental part ahead of time through preparation. I mean, it's pretty impressive. I wish we could do more of that in kind of everyday life, never mind just business life.
Well, it sounds like successful athletes, particularly Olympic athletes, really train to be resilient. Is this something we see in other systems? And if not, how can we build resilience into a system as a corporation?
Yeah, you know, well, many people say some people are more resilient than others. And, you know, probably that's true. Some people are taller, some people are faster. Big deal. Everyone can learn to be resilient. That's kind of one of the punchlines of this column. It's entirely possible, but it really requires you to recognize if something's going wrong, doing something about it, acknowledging, being open-minded, humility. It also helps if you've done a lot of thinking ahead of time about what could go wrong, so you can bounce back quickly. Kind of the Michaela Schifrin example. Within an organization, within a company, what could you do to kind of engender this? Well, you could select for resilience, and you can do that through a variety of whether it's psychological tests or in-depth interviewing and for higher level positions, referencing when you talk to a lot of people. You can ask for specific examples of that, so you can look for that. And then once somebody's in a company, you want your supervisors, your leaders, to demand it, to expect it, and maybe most important, to model it themselves. You know, if you're working for me and you see something goes wrong, you're going to watch very carefully how I'm managing it, and whether I'm getting back up, and whether I'm unafraid to say, you know what, I screwed up here, and we're going to fix it, and here's how we're going to fix it, and here's how we're going to avoid falling into this trap again. That type of modeling behavior is really great. And then you can go further, which is, especially when you get to managerial or leadership positions in a company, there are a variety of places where you're getting evaluated on all sorts of things. Certainly your ability to produce results, but also how you produce those results and your leadership capabilities. Are we adding in resilience into, you know, what a lot of companies call competency models, or, you know, a series of criteria people look at to evaluate leaders or managers and whether they should move up? And I think you can do that. And you could also kind of go, I mean, there's a lot of techniques in a kind of even a classroom setting that could help you become more resilient through discussion, through case analysis, through coaching. So I think there's a lot we can do to help any one of us become more resilient, regardless of what our kind of starting point is. And maybe more important, I think there's a lot any company can do. Because you want, imagine how strong you would be, how difficult it would be to beat a team where everyone's resilient. It would be tough, because we can take a punch, but we're going to get back up and keep going.
It sounds like resilience really then is tied to risk taking, and in industries or positions where a person really has to take significant amount of risks, perhaps resilience is more important. Do you see a role for resilience in companies or positions that are really mature, where someone already has their tasks outlined for them and failure is less likely?
It's a good question. I think failure is always likely. And actually, when you have that mentality in life, first
optimism.
Of all, yeah, exactly. First of all, you know, the old story from, old title of a book by Andy Grove, Only the Paranoid Survive. There's something to it. Of course, it's always possible. Entrepreneurial, high discretion industries where there's a lot of change going on, volatile industries, there's more that can go wrong. But just managing people on a day-to-day basis and whatever you do and those interactions that you have, there's a lot of ways to kind of struggle with that. So I think this skill set is, if you want to call it that, or capability, is important in any arena. And I always say, you know, when you're in a situation where something is less common, if you're really good at that, you'll stand out even more, not less, because your competitors, so to speak, don't have that. They don't think about that. So more mature industries, you know, people don't worry about the maybe resilience as much as they would in Silicon Valley. But if you have it, it's a big advantage.
I think broadening it also from just individuals having resilience. When I look at companies for recruiting, I certainly want a company that is resilient. When I see a company that has had an initiative that has failed and then has pivoted on that and has been able to move on, take away the investment from a failing initiative, that's something that's important to me in judging the company and the future potential of that company going forward.
So you actually get a little concerned when you see a company where everything's going right.
At that point, I think I would wonder, are they averse to risk? And maybe are they averse to risk because they lack that resiliency? So in some senses, when I see those failures and I see that quick recovery time, sort of the short cycle time in learning from the failures and moving on, that actually gives me confidence, yes.
You know, it's kind of backwards, right? But it's pretty funny because I wrote another column on that has to do with expectations and surprises. And one of the things I said is that I want to be surprised as a manager and as a leader. Many people would say quite the opposite. But if everything's going exactly the way it's supposed to go, in quotes, I'm worried. Either our targets are too low, or I'm missing something, or we're not taking enough risk, or we're not stretching out. And so I get exactly what you're saying. Ellen, earlier I said something about the need to take a punch as part of resilience, and it makes me think of something you said before we went on the air, which is you're heading off to New York to see Rocky, the new play. What's up with that?
Well, I'm very excited to go and see that play, but it actually did remind me a little bit of resilience, particularly in terms of you look at a boxer and they get hit over and over again. Sometimes they're expecting it and they can brace for it. Other times they're not expecting it, and yet they still have to recover just the same. So in terms of resilience, it seems like the true epitome of resilience is not just being able to recover from something, not just recovering once, but being able to recover from something over and over again, both when those setbacks and failures are expected and when they're unexpected.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of truth to that. It's not easy, and you know, when you do recover from whatever went wrong, and then something happens again, it takes a toll. That's certainly the case for anyone who's unfortunately been ill with a recurring illness. It's just very, very difficult, and to keep your internal strength is important. But in a business context, if you do keep failing and having to have this kind of incredible resilience, keep taking punch after punch after punch, you know, you have to get some things right. And there is a role for competence in this as well. And there's never a replacement for competence. And, you know, you combine both these thoughts, someone who's really capable, someone who's got the ability, and then someone at the same time who is confident enough and humble enough to acknowledge when something's going wrong and bounce back and take the punch and take the next punch and have that resilience. Boy, wouldn't we all want to have somebody like that on our team, right?
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining me today, Ellen.
Thank you.
This has been Sid Wazin. If you'd like to comment on this podcast, follow Professor Finkelstein on Twitter @SidFinkelstein, #SidWazin. Thank you for listening.